Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Once a decade, legislative districts are drawn. Redrawing political lines is a powerful tool that determines who wins an election, controls the state legislature, and ultimately which laws pass. In Virginia, legislatures create their own criteria and draw their own districts. This process is known as gerrymandering. With us today in studio to talk about gerrymandering are Brian Cannon. Brian became the executive director of One Virginia 2021 in 2015. He brings over a decade of experience in nonprofit leadership, community building, fundraising, and bipartisan advocacy for state policy issues. He has previously worked as a consultant with startups and high-growth companies. While in law school, Brian studied election law and was on one of the winning teams in the 2011 statewide redistricting competition. And Bill Oglesby. Bill is the producer and director of Jerry Rigged, Turning Democracy on Its Head, a documentary produced by Community Idea Stations Richmond PBS in cooperation with One Virginia 2021. He is an assistant professor at the Robertson School of Media and Culture at Virginia Commonwealth University, where he teaches both documentary production and media law and ethics. He is also the owner of Bill Oglesby Media Consulting, a firm that specializes in strategic media consultation. Good morning to you both.
Morning, Dan.
Well.
We have a lot to talk about, so we got to get started. Let's have a little bit about. I'd like to hear a little bit from each of you about how you got drawn to the project, the issue of gerrymandering. We'll start with you, Brian.
So probably the first thing that got me to even care about politics was John McCain back in 1999 when I was still in high school, when he was talking about campaign finance reform, which is one of those issues that when I dug into in law school. Certainly a problem, certainly something we need to address, but there's not a clear fix. And if you just pivot just a little bit from campaign finance reform, you're looking at the other big thing that's systematically wrong with our republic, and you run into gerrymandering. And yet that is so fixable. Not that campaign finance reform isn't ultimately fixable, but it's a lot more of a lift to do that. Gerrymandering is equally one of those, well, this just isn't right. This just only benefits the incumbents. And so I've been involved in this for quite a while, studied it in law school, and I'm lucky to lead One Virginia 2021, which is the bipartisan advocacy group in Virginia for reform.
Bill?
Well, I guess I was, it was a perfect timing kind of situation for me. As you say, I teach documentary production at the Robertson School at VCU, and as such have had a chance to meet a number of different documentarians, both locally and regionally. I also am a longtime student of Virginia politics. I became a page in the General Assembly when I was 14 years old, and from that point on have really been an informal observer of the political scene. So I had a great interest in the whole subject of gerrymandering and redistricting reform long before I ever met Brian and the other folks from One Virginia. So it was just a perfect opportunity to learn more myself and get involved in maybe making a difference.
All right, let's dig into the nitty-gritty. Brian, how did gerrymandering get started? What's the history of it?
Well, the original sin in this was the U.S. Constitution leaves the power to draw congressional districts to the states. And the Madison's idea of having communities get together and elect their representatives makes perfect sense, except for when you let the politicians who are in power draw the line. So actually the first problem with gerrymandering started out here in the 5th Congressional District for the first race where Madison and Monroe were put together in the same congressional district in an attempt to affect the outcome. But the kind of modern history on this would be with the equal population requirement in districts that came about from Baker v. Carr in the 1960s, a Supreme Court case that gave us one man, one vote, which is another really good idea, but it's just led to some shenanigans being played.
And I've heard people say that gerrymandering is the issue in politics today. Is that true?
I would say, yeah, there's a lot of really important issues that we should all be focusing on. But as it's been told to me a couple of times before, gerrymandering is not the issue I care about the most, but it's the issue I have to care about first. And I think that, you know, when you look at this, this is much similar to 20 years ago when McCain was pushing campaign finance reform. This is the ethical issue in our politics. This is the shorthand for how do you know your politician, whether they're right or left or center, is ethical, whether they're willing to fight this kind of corrupt and rigging the system practice.
Now, just to be very clear, that the goal of One Virginia 2021 is not to get more Democrats elected, right?
That is true. So we go on on progressive stations and circles like WPVC, and we get folks to say, is One Virginia 2021 just a sneaky Republican organization? And then I'll go to my Republican friends or organizations. I'll say, One Virginia 2021, you're just a sneaky Democratic organization. And we're not either. We're bipartisan and multipartisan, in fact, with Greens and Libertarian support as well. And we really just, the thing that unites us on this issue is that we believe these districts should belong to Virginians, not to any party or politician.
And it's true that both political parties practice gerrymandering.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Democrats did it for forever. Republicans in Virginia got the reins to do it in 2001. And then actually Democrats and Republicans teamed up and did it to Virginians together back in 2011, which is the last the current gerrymander we live under today.
And across the country, is gerrymandering more prevalent in some states rather than in others?
A few states have figured out how to fix this. So some states have passed citizen resolutions to fix it. Others have gone through their general assemblies to fix it. But I would say that Virginia is probably in the top five of the bad ones. A lot of the mid-Atlantic states where you have a diverse population, where you have rivers and a Chesapeake Bay carving you up, which gives you extra opportunity for that. We're unfortunately in the bad category on this around the country. But it is an American problem.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the Constitution and what provisions it makes to cover this situation. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Sure. The U.S. Constitution, we get two requirements from that. The first is we get equal population, which is from the one man, one vote case in Baker v. Carr. And then the second requirement we get is the Voting Rights Act requirement. And that is basically if there's a small or a cohesive enough racial, ethnic, or language minority community. In Virginia, that's oftentimes African Americans, and Texas, it's Latinos, and New York, it's Hasidic Jews. Whatever that is, if you have a small racial, ethnic, or language community, you have to keep them together to allow them to elect a candidate of their choice. Doesn't mean they have to elect, if it's a black community, they have to elect somebody black, but it has to be the black community deciding, rather than what it was before the Voting Rights Act was passed, that, you know, they would carve up that community so that their voice would be fragmented and not able to elect a candidate.
And which states are the worst offenders? Is there a sort of a bad boy list?
There is. It depends on how you calculate it. I would say that Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, and Pennsylvania are all vying for top dog there. You could toss in some other non-Mid-Atlantic states. You would toss in Texas, Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan. It's not a good list. We're definitely not on. We're no Iowa when it comes to this.
And Maryland's a perfect example too of where you've got a Democratic Party that's in control of the General Assembly that has used gerrymandering to their advantage. You've got one thing we point out in the documentary is there's one district in Maryland that is so convoluted and so ridiculously long. And if you know Maryland, of course, it's a small state and area. But this one district, if you were to take it, the lines, the boundaries of that district and stretch them out, they would stretch from Washington to nearly Boston. And that's how crazy it gets.
Yeah, and I appreciate you adding that too, because we are the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And I want our listeners to understand that this is not just a problem on the left or the right. It's a problem across the board. At 10 minutes past the hour, you're listening to WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville at 94.7. Brian Cannon and Bill Oglesby here from One Virginia 21. We're talking about gerrymandering. Okay, so we had a short list of the worst offenders. What about states that get it right?
Well, anything's better than what we've got today. I would say that Iowa is considered kind of the gold standard in redistricting reform. But you look at Colorado or Washington or California, Arizona, Florida, New York, Ohio, they've all done, but even New Jersey has some sort of redistricting reform that's better than ours, which is, as a Virginian, a little embarrassing to say. So, I think it's about getting it out of the hands of politicians and getting some really clear guidelines as to what they should do and making the process transparent. None of these three things we do in Virginia.
Right. Now, you've explained earlier that the process is basically to get the right kind of voters in the right kind of district so that you can either get an advantage or give your opponent a disadvantage. So the big question that everybody asks about this is, how do they know how I'm going to vote? Bill?
It's something where, they have, there are all sorts of give me a little bit more idea of what you're talking about. I want to make sure I hit exactly what you were wanting to.
Well, they have these computer programs, I understand, that they yeah. can use to draw these lines. And they can say, I want to put Bill Oglesby in a certain district because he tends to vote one way or the other. How do they know how Bill Oglesby is going to vote?
That's exactly correct. And that's the thing. The algorithms are such that you can now know, that they know more about you online than you know about yourself, is what I often say. The fact of the matter is they can know so much that they can literally draw lines very specifically down streets. One of the requirements of districting is that districts be contiguous, meaning there can't be breaks in the district. It has to be one continuous line. And yet, if you look at them on a map, there are many of these gerrymandered districts that look like they're not contiguous. They are, but it's only because in some cases there's a line that just goes down a street, literally. They can draw it around individual houses. They can draw it around city blocks. They can do all sorts of things because they know that in all likelihood, the people who are living in these houses probably tend to favor one party over another.
Let me be sure, Dan, that we assure your listeners, we do still have a secret ballot that is intact. It's something we borrowed from the Australians in about 100 or so years ago. It's not original in America. It used to be apparently a very public declaration of who you were voting for. But we do still have a secret ballot. However, we know which elections people voted in. And when you go to a primary, like I hope folks did the other Tuesday here in Virginia, when you go to a primary, you'd select either a Democrat or Republican ballot, which personally bothers me. I wish I could take them both, but you can't. And so that choice is also recorded. So if I look into Bill's voting history, which is available to the parties and to certain advocacy organizations, if I look into Bill's voting history and I see that Bill voted consistently in Democratic primaries since he was, 18 years old, and you can kind of much see that, and then I know I don't have to know who Bill pulled the lever for. In the general election, I'm going to guess he pulled it for the Democrat, right?
Right.
And on top of that, you add in all the data he talks about. They can find out whether, they can pull your Capital One credit card and find out whether you buy Crest or Colgate toothpaste and put it into some big model and find out that means you're, a Bernie Sanders type Democrat versus a Hillary Democrat or whatever it is. They're able to really get that detail.
What magazines do you subscribe to?
Yeah, memberships you have.
All sorts of things that, and these algorithms are worked out so that they can know there's at least a likelihood of you leaning toward a certain Democratic Party by the actions you take.
And it sounds from looking at the results that it works pretty well. I mean, it sounds like they can find out how you're going to vote pretty accurately because gerrymandering is very successful, right?
Yeah. So the iteration that the two big things that have happened in the last 2 years or 2 decades on this has been first the kind of Karl Rove data mining revolution where they started taking consumer data, all of which Bill just mentioned, and kind of plugging that into voting histories and making predictive models. The next part is, for gerrymandering's purposes, is, the number one enemy to gerrymandering is that people move, right? So you draw the districts once a decade, but then over the course of that decade, people leave Southwest Virginia and they move into Northern Virginia. Well, what if you could predict the rate at which they're going to move into Northern Virginia? There's going to be an increased Latino population around Lorton, Virginia here. Charlottesville's going to grow in this way. There's going to be a new development over here. If they start incorporating that, which they have, then these maps that they draw once a decade at the beginning of the decade remain sticky for the whole decade.
Right, right. What is packing districts?
Packing districts is where is is usually a term associated with racial gerrymandering, where you pack a racial, ethnic, or language minority group together. Now, this is the opposite of what the Voting Rights Act was trying to solve originally. 50, 60 years ago, the problem was cracking districts, which were where you would take a community and you would carve it up such that they wouldn't have a cohesive voice. Now, they will try to find, like when they drew the 3rd Congressional District, which is Congressman Bobby Scott's district, when they drew that district, they found every black person they could along the James River and shoved them into one district. What that does is, there's like, look, Congressman Scott's going to get a win. He might as well get a win by a lot of points, where it's not going to be competitive. But what they can do is they can take black voters out of the other surrounding districts and pack them into just one district. And it's another way to dilute their vote.
And what are some of the more egregious examples of gerrymandering? I'm thinking of, in particular, of the Red Map Project. Bill?
Yeah, the Red Map Project was it really was born out of the big win that Barack Obama had in 2008. And, of course, the Democrats at that time controlled both houses of Congress as well. And I interviewed one of the architects of Red Map, whose name was Chris Jankowski, and he talked about how he was so depressed at the results of that election and was trying to think of something that could be done to reverse that. And he came up with the fact that, hey, we're coming up on the census of 2010, that will be followed very quickly by the redrawing of districts all across the country. And so what can we do to reverse this situation we're finding ourselves in now? And so what they targeted was they targeted key districts across the country, and for a relatively small amount of money. Now, we're talking millions of dollars, but nationwide, it was a relatively small amount of money. They poured money into certain local races so that they could actually take over the control of state houses across the country that would then be responsible for drawing the districts in those states, redrawing the districts. And as a result, we have seen, of course, that we have Republican control in a great majority of the districts across the country now, and they then have had the power to, in most cases, those legislatures have had the power to redraw the maps in their favor in those states.
So why is it different what happened in 2010 as compared to all the years before that? Gerrymandering's been around since the 1960s. What made the Red Map Project so successful?
Well, I think what happened really was that they were smart about it. They literally studied where can we most effectively put our resources. Where can we literally pour money? I mean, there were some districts where you had the same representative, the same Democratic representative in that case, for many years, and who appeared to be relatively popular, but they poured money into the opponent's race and were able to make a difference. And these kinds of algorithmic changes that we've talked about in the ability to know where the voters are has really been of great advantage then when they took over the legislature to be able to redraw those districts in a way that clearly benefited one party over another.
It was the perfect wave in timing, right? Politics is all about timing. The 2010 was going to be a down year for the Democrats because of a presidential midterm, and all that technology that, you know, now they got the sophisticated modeling and predictive software. It's brilliant. I mean, it was just a good time. But let me be clear, if the Democrats had had that, if McCain had been elected in 08, Democrats would have had that same advantage.
And Democrats have talked about doing the same thing coming up, you know, with 2018. The problem this time, of course, is that the element of surprise isn't there. Most people didn't see that happening in 2010 until it was too late.
After the break, we'll talk about what One Virginia 2021 is doing to fight gerrymandering in Virginia. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with Brian Cannon and Bill Oglesby talking about gerrymandering in Virginia. Okay, so there's this organization, One Virginia 2021, and Brian, you are the executive director. How did you get started?
Well, I'm the second executive director, so it happened before me. there were a lot of good folks that have been advocating for redistricting reform for decades, longer than I've been alive. And so I call these all these folks torchbearers of this movement. One Virginia 2021 is just the latest torchbearer in this important movement. And I think the torch had been put down after the 2011 bipartisan gerrymander, which I call an incumbent protection racket, that Virginia passed, which was really disappointing to all the advocates when we thought we might have a shot at reform then. And then some Charlottesville folks picked up the torch. Lee Middleditch, who's the founder of Sorensen, he's a partner at McGuire Woods and was the former president of the Chamber of Commerce. Shannon Valentine, a former Democratic delegate from Lynchburg. Bill Bowling, a former statewide elected Republican lieutenant governor. And Terry Cooper, a former an attorney and a founding member of the statewide Tea Party Federation, along with a lot of other good folks, really from all across the spectrum. And the one thing that united them all is what I said, is that, you know, these districts should belong to Virginians and not to any politician. And that was kind of the founding principle there.
You mentioned some of the founding members. Were there any other people that were instrumental in getting One Virginia 2021 off the ground in the early days?
There certainly were. I mean, of course, there was the kind of folks that had been on board. The League of Women Voters had always pushed for this. Jim Fernald, actually a local businessman in town who was worked at NBC 29 for his career, helped do it. There was a lot of good folks, and I wasn't there at the table. I was in I was off practicing law. But Mike Signer, the current mayor, helped get us off the ground as well. There was a lot of folks, and probably a lot that I'm missing. But it was a wide group of folks that there's not a lot of agreement on things, except for we need to fix gerrymandering.
In a minute, we're going to talk about the feature-length film that you and Bill made on the subject. But before we do that, I would just like to talk about the main areas of advocacy that you've established. Let's talk about them one at a time. Independent Redistricting Commission, what does that mean?
Sure. If you think about this, you know, if we're having a baseball game between Republicans and Democrats, you got to have some umpires there, right? Somebody's got to call balls and strikes and safe and out. Because nobody would trust the batter to call his own balls and strikes because it's a conflict of interest. So the Independent Redistricting Commission is something that about a dozen other states have. Some have better structures than others. We can learn from that. But the bottom line is we got to get the right now in Virginia, the most self-interested people on the planet draw the lines. We got to find a better way to do it. We can't let the same politician who runs in that district then draw the district for himself for the next decade.
So what would you say to critics who say that an independent commission is just the same as we have now, but without the transparency?
Yeah, well, what's funny is we have no transparency now because the General Assembly has what's called legislative privilege. So, and actually the Senate Democrats asserted this when we filed a lawsuit over the gerrymandered districts. They wouldn't let us get to what they were thinking or doing or their working papers for it. So if you gave this to an independent commission that did not have legislators on it, which I think is an important part, if you gave it to an independent commission, that commission becomes FOIA-able. Under the Freedom of Information Act, you can actually get their documents, which would be a great step forward to having a little transparency and sunshine in that process.
In the states that have successfully done this, that have had independent commissions to draw the lines, has the process traditionally been transparent in those states?
Some more than others. I don't want to make the setup the argument that the perfect is the enemy of the good here. Anything's better than what we've got. But a lot of times you see a lot more commission hearings. You see a process where the legislators don't control it and don't protect the documents, don't protect their working products, and they're out there in the open. It's not perfect, but I don't think we have to be perfect to be better.
Talk about public participation in the process as you see it.
Yeah, so right now, even Virginia does have a public participation element. The problem is it doesn't matter, right? Because the people, they'll go on a road show all around the states. The legislators will do their shows, and they'll listen to people, but they won't hear them. And it doesn't matter. They'll go ahead and draw the districts how they want. Public participation has to be a really active part that we all take ownership of, and we have to do it before they draw the lines. Right. We can't wait to say, oh, here's the map. Oh, I don't like the maps. No, we have to say, look, this community has to grow or shrink. We might not know exactly by how much, but the district itself is going to have to get smaller or bigger geographically to accommodate a growing or shrinking population. Here's where we believe we should go, to reflect our community. The community has to be involved in this early, and we've got to force the politicians to hear us.
Now, you've produced, with Bill's help and input, a film called Jerry Rigged, Turning Democracy on Its Head. We'll start with you, Brian. Where did the film come from? And then we're going to talk to Bill more about the making of the film.
The idea came from one of our board members, Tyson Janney, I believe, who approached WCVE, which is the great station in Richmond and Charlottesville, about an idea, because they do such great work on documentaries, about an idea about gerrymandering in Virginia, but also with a little bit of focus outside of it. And there have been a couple other gerrymandering documentaries produced, and they were quickly dated, and they weren't that good, and they didn't really speak to what we were talking about here in Virginia. And so there was a definite need, and I thought the idea was great, but I had no clue anything about how a documentary gets made or how even WCVE would go about that project. But I learned a ton, and that's how I got to meet Bill.
26 minutes past the hour, we're with Brian Cannon and Bill Oglesby from One Virginia 2021 here in studio with us this morning. We're talking about gerrymandering in Virginia on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. All right, Bill, you're a filmmaker, a producer, a director. These guys call you up and say, we want a film on gerrymandering. What were your first thoughts?
My first thought was, I love the subject. My second thought was, what am I going to do visually with this thing? Because obviously when you're talking about doing a documentary, it's not just a matter of telling people. There were plenty of words to use. There was more than enough. In fact, the big problem in trying to cover it in an hour was not getting so much into the weeds, as I called it, that the average person would get lost or their eyes would glaze over, that kind of thing. But the other problem was on the visual end. When you're talking about gerrymandering, what do I have naturally? I have people, I have land, and I have maps. And other than that, that's not a great way to keep people's attention for an hour. So that was my challenge all along, was in making it visually interesting. And of course, One Virginia, the folks there were invaluable in providing all of the information. And then it was just a matter of trying to put it together in a way that would keep people interested and sort of start from a very basic standpoint where we're not assuming that anybody really understands what gerrymandering is at all.
Now, there's a lot of mathematics in gerrymandering. And there's an old saying that authors have that for every formula you put in your book, you lose half your readership. So you had to deal with explaining to people how the math works, what compactness is, you know, how you could take the same number of voters in the same geographic area and get several different outcomes.
Right.
And the way the film does this is with some very creative graphics. I call them graphics, but they're really animations, really. Can you talk about how you decided what needed to be an animated graphic and who made the graphics and how did you go about, you know, keeping people there with you through the tricky math stuff?
Well, there's some exactly what you're saying. I mean, it occurred to me we could use modern technology. We used drone technology as a way of literally showing what city blocks look like, and then taking animation to illustrate how you can draw around blocks and this kind of thing. We had a situation where I knew one of the issues was you had to show exactly how convoluted some of these lines are of these districts. And so I love to tell the story that I must have been very, very concerned and very into what I was doing, because I woke up at 3 o'clock one morning having dreamed about a game show where you try to figure out what a district looks like. And I almost turned over and went back to sleep, said I'll deal with that in the morning. But I remembered, you know, that too many other times when I wanted to remember something I thought about in the middle of the night, it was gone by the morning. So I literally got out of bed and started writing down everything that I had been dreaming about. And there's actually a part of the documentary that deals with that, where it looks a little bit like a game show, but we're basically asking just average people, what does this district look like to you? And it's meant to be funny, but on the other hand, it's a serious matter as well, because these are actual districts that we identify, and so it was a way, using methods like that is a way to sort of reach people and make a serious point in sometimes not so serious a way. We had a We have a one little snippet where there's a song that's sung about gerrymandering. And literally, it was a group in Northern Virginia that came to me, had heard I was doing this, and said, we're very socially conscious, and we've actually written a song about gerrymandering and would like you to hear it. So there are all sorts of little ways that you can throw in a serious point, but do it in a creative way that will hopefully keep the audience engaged, even as they're learning.
We've shown this film all over Virginia, small showings, big showings, all sorts, probably 100, 120 times by now. And the number one comment I get back, Bill, is that people say, I thought this was going to be really boring. And it was really interesting. And there's a lot more to this issue than I ever thought. And for your viewers, Dan, if anybody wants to see it, if they go on the YouTube page for One Virginia 2021, the film is there available for all.
That's great. That's great. You talked a little bit about the use of humor with the images, the silhouetted images. Are there other places where you tried to bring humor in to just kind of keep it friendly?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, when we're talking even when I was interviewing people, I loved my favorite interviews were, of course, the people who had personal, and in many cases they were former legislators who had personal experience with the whole topic. We talked with Ward Armstrong, who was for many years a very powerful House leader from the Martinsville area, and he talked about how he was, you know, districted out of his district. His district was basically made one that would be impossible for him to win, and how he actually went back. His in-laws, I believe, had a house in a different district, and so he actually moved into that house as a way of trying to address that issue. And it was sort of a funny situation with a very serious message. It didn't work for him even then, and he's very open about that. And he used some very colorful language and so forth in describing what gerrymandering does and the insidious effects it has. I tried to include things like that because it makes it more human.
No one's more colorful than Ward Armstrong describing gerrymandering.
So a lot of people probably don't understand that you have to live in the district that you represent. That's correct, right?
For the state house and state senate, you do. For Congress, you don't.
Right. Yeah, okay. So for the state legislature, you have to. So they literally drew a district line around his house. Is that right? Put him in another district so he couldn't run in the district that he wanted to run in?
In his case, I don't know that it was literally drawn around his one house. But on the other hand, he was definitely drawn into another district. And his position is that it was done specifically so that he would cease to be the kind of very active voice against the majority in the House of Delegates that he had become.
Oh, it's also the map drawer's position that they did that too. They admit fully to that. But you're right, Dan. I mean, people do that all the time. It's not just Ward Armstrong where they finagle the districts. Literally, politicians will draw out people who might even want to run against them, even within their own party or opposing parties. Doesn't matter. That person, that local elected official, it might run. He's popular. Let's just make sure they're not in my district.
That's the thing. Lines are drawn not just to get people elected, but to keep people from being elected.
Right. Now, Bill, there's quite a few very influential people in the film. The governor is in the film in spots, and there are many others. Was it difficult to get people to come out and speak in front of a camera about gerrymandering, or was that process fairly easy to do? How did you go about recruiting some of these people?
There were a few who chose not to participate, but I was actually surprised at how enthusiastic so many people were. To be a part of the video and to talk about their own roles, either in being a voice for reform or having had a horror story related to the gerrymandering system.
And how was the documentary funded?
So we originally approached WCVE, and we thought that One Virginia would have to pony up some or all of the money for it, and that, as an executive director, that makes me, you know, get a little sweaty about how much money it costs to make a film. But actually, WCVE took this on as one of their key projects this year and or this past year. And we were so grateful for their leadership and their sponsorship of it. And I think, you know, with Bill at the helm, they made a heck of a project.
Now, we've brought along a little clip here from the last minute and a half of the film. Unfortunately, we're not TV, so you're just going to have to use your imagination on the visual part. Bill, I was wondering if you could set this up for us.
Okay. Well, of course, you want to end as much as you can on a high note, which isn't always easy when you don't have but so much progress to report, particularly in the Commonwealth. However, what we knew people would be asking themselves when they finished watching this was, what can I do? You know, don't just tell me how bad things are. Tell me what I can do. And so we wanted to give people some opportunity for hope, but we also wanted to talk about, we wanted to make sure we were being bipartisan, and that's not always very easy when you're talking about a situation where, you know, one party has been in statewide control. The General Assembly, of course, is in Republican hands, but statewide officials for the last number of years have been Democrats. So we wanted to make sure we had both sides represented, and that's what we were trying to do.
Right, and so. George Allen is the beginning character in this, and you mentioned him earlier.
Yes.
What was his gerrymandering situation?
What was so critical there was, again, you know, George Allen was a very, very prominent Republican, and he was really one of the in the modern era, one of the first really egregious examples of gerrymandering, where he literally had just been elected to Congress, and the line was then, within a week or two of him taking office, the line was drawn around his house to put him in a district with Tom Bliley, who was from the Richmond area and who was a mentor to George Allen. And George Allen talks about the fact that he was urged by many people to challenge Tom Bliley, but he just couldn't see doing that. And so he went from, you know, the high of elation at being elected to Congress very, very quickly to realizing he was going to be a one-term member of Congress. And that's when he decided to instead run for governor. And we know what happened then. He was elected, and he actually takes a lot of joy in knowing that he was, he got the last laugh there. But the interesting thing there was, I didn't know when I went to interview him, I didn't know how he actually stood on the whole reform effort. I was going to interview him just based on this great story he had of being a victim of gerrymandering. And when I got there, I found that he was one of the strongest Republican voices in favor of reform.
All right. So this clip begins with George Allen, rather. And it is from the last roughly minute and a half of the film, Gerrymandered, Turning Democracy on Its Head. And we'll be back right after this clip.
It is too complicated to figure out where to vote and who my delegate is or state senator. There's got to be a better way. And I would hope that somebody who's running for governor in the future, or attorney general, lieutenant governor, state legislators, will run on this issue. Make it one of those darn right issues. And I think people could get behind it because it's a good government issue.
There are states that have done nonpartisan redistricting reform. Why would we want to be the last? You know, let's be a leader and join that effort. And I would hope that citizens might encourage their legislators in that way. You know, what are you doing to promote fair legislative districts?
I've been very pleased to see the business community step up recently in terms of these statewide efforts to promote reform. I'm proud of the fact that we've got in this Virginia reform effort both Democrats and Republicans, former elected officials of great stature, saying, hey, we need to get this right in Virginia.
I think you can only postpone the right thing from happening for only so long.
People of goodwill will have to step forward and say, look, this is not the right way for us to legislate, that the voters should have a right to choose their representatives, and that we want a fair, nonpartisan commission to draw the lines.
It's not a question of if it's going to happen. The question is when it's going to happen. I think we're closer now than ever.
We're back with Brian Cannon and Bill Oglesby, and we're talking about gerrymandering in Virginia and across the country. So, Bill, there were a number of characters in that clip we just heard. Who were the other players?
Right. We started off with George Allen. Then we went to Tim Kaine. We went to Mark Warner after that. We had Ward Armstrong we talked about, State Senator Louise Lucas from down in Tidewater. who's been a very active voice for reform. And I do want to mention the one that ended up the piece, and actually the documentary ends with him, is Ken Plum from Northern Virginia, who's the longest serving member of the General Assembly, and who, interestingly enough, started this effort. He's a Democrat, and he started this effort personally when the Democrats were in control of the Assembly. And it gives him a lot of credibility today, I think, because, you know, as he said, he'll sometimes have Republicans say to him, oh, yeah, well, you know, you see the opportunity for your party to advance. That's why you're doing this. And he'll hold up his original copy of a bill from 1982 that he helped sponsor and say, no. I was sponsoring this when we were in the majority, and I still thought it was something that we needed because it's a matter of good government.
And I don't think that can be overemphasized. I mean, if we're going to make progress on this, it cannot have the appearance of a partisan undertaking.
Absolutely. This isn't a left-right issue. This is a right-wrong issue. Right. And we have to acknowledge, if you're a Democrat, you have to acknowledge your side's been bad. If you're a Republican, you have to acknowledge your side's been bad. And, all right, well, how do we fix this together?
I'd like to move on a little bit now to where do we go from here? One Virginia 2021 is active in a lot of different areas. The three main ones are litigation, ballot reform, and legislative reform. I was wondering, Brian, if you'd talk about each of those in turn. Let's start with litigation.
Sure. Well, you know, here's the good news, Dan, is that there's a lot of progress on this issue, broadly speaking. This is coming up in the zeitgeist for people. People are talking about it. If you just do Google Trends, you go into Google Trends and you type in the word gerrymandering, you will see a huge spike in this issue coming in the last couple of years. People are really starting to wake up to this being the ethical issue in our politics. One of the key ways that's happening is through litigation. Folks are hearing about this in the courts. The Supreme Court keeps taking up these cases. A lot of them are racial gerrymandering cases. We just heard last week the Supreme Court's going to hear a case from Wisconsin about partisan gerrymandering. And in Virginia, we've got our own litigation. One Virginia 2021 sponsored litigation that filed suit to defend Virginia's constitutional requirement for compactness. If you look at any of these maps, you wouldn't know that's there. But they are supposed to be compact, and somebody's got to stand up for that. And we're doing that here in Virginia.
And have you brought any litigation forward so far?
Yeah. So that's the litigation. So we sued.
And how did it go?
So we lost in the trial court, and we are appealing to the state Supreme Court. We'll never go any further than that. That's the terminal court for this. But we're really proud of what we did because we sued over 11 districts in Virginia. And these districts were, six of them were drawn by Senate Democrats, five of them were drawn by House Republicans. So it's the first bipartisan or really nonpartisan lawsuit in Virginia that's not about racial or political gerrymandering. But let's just look at the books, laws we have on the books today, and see if we can enforce them. And that's through the compactness requirement in our Constitution.
All right. Ballot reform, not available in Virginia, I understand.
Yes.
How can that be used in other states?
In other states, citizens have taken this upon themselves to say enough's enough. And they've said that, you know, to heck with their general assemblies or their state legislatures, and they've gone around them to institute reform. Most of the states that have done this have gone about this process, though not completely, but that's the way it happened. We don't have that option here in Virginia. We have to go through our legislature.
And that brings us to the third main area of advocacy, legislative reform. How are we making any progress on that?
We are, and people always ask me, you know, Brian, even if you're right and you have the best idea, politicians will never give up their power to do this. And that's a really skeptical way to look at it. But I understand completely. I mean, we shouldn't go into this starry-eyed thinking that just because we have the right idea, we're going to win this. We've got to have the right idea. We've got to have people talking about this, making it. I can't just say it's the ethical issue of the day. Everyone has to say it's the ethical issue of our day and really raise this issue to our politicians. Here's the good news. From a micro look on gerrymandering, there are actually states, New York, Ohio, and Nebraska, whose state legislatures have passed reform. So when people tell me, oh, state politicians would never give up this power, I'm like, well, that's just not true at all. Three of them have done it so in the last couple of years. For what it's worth, Nebraska's governor vetoed the darn thing. But if you look at those three states, they're all pretty different politically, different geographically. You know, Governor Kasich, Republican governor in Ohio, led that fight there. You know, so there's a lot of hope to be had here. In Virginia, we've got about 35 out of 40 state senators that are in favor of reform, and we've got about 60 of 100 House of Delegates members who are in favor of reform. Now, that's not quite enough because some of the House Republican leadership in Virginia has still been opposing this. But I think generally speaking, the momentum is there and the path to victory through Virginia's legislature is there.
Now, I have to say, it seems like it's hard to imagine how you can get any legislator. What is the incentive for a legislator to get behind redistricting reform? Because isn't it a no-win situation for them?
I don't think so. I think people go, I mean, we elect, but people think about this. When they originally run for office, people run for office to make our education system better, to keep our taxes low, to take care of people who need to take care of and get our transportation in line, that kind of stuff like that, grow jobs. Nobody runs to gerrymander, right? That's not on their platform. That's not in their brochures. If it's ever been in anybody's brochure that I'm there to gerrymander, please send it to us at One Virginia. We would love to see that. So people don't run on this issue. It's an insider baseball issue that they come about. But if you look at how reform movements have worked, whether it's women's suffrage, whether it's civil rights, whether it's campaign finance reform that did pass, even though it's been gutted by the courts, you look at all that and there's two elements. One, there are people there that just believe it's the darn right thing to do, like George Allen said, and we should do it. Then there are other people that have to be shamed into doing what is clearly, obviously, the right thing to do. And so we got to support those people who believe it in the first way, and then we've got to shame the rest of those people into it. And that's been the formula for eons, I guess.
I think the important thing to remember, too, is it's not just a matter of whichever party is in control votes for or against reform, and the minority party votes for reform. It gets more complicated than that, because what invariably happens when the assembly is considering some kind of reform measure is, or when they're considering redistricting plans actually, is the majority party will actually go to members of the minority party and say, well, I know overall you may not be happy with this, but look how your district is protected here. You're going to get reelected without much problem under this plan. And that's how they've at times had success in having the members of the minority party to sign on to a given plan, even though it doesn't really benefit their party, but it benefits them personally. And that's an example, I think, of some of the problems you have with gerrymandering.
And I need to remind our listeners that we're talking about the state legislature here. It's the state legislature that draws these lines, not the federal government, but the state legislature.
Yeah.
And Virginia's state legislature, the speaker is a Republican, speaker of the House. How do you win the speaker over? Because without winning the speaker over, you can't get it to the floor for a vote. Is that correct?
Yeah, most folks don't know in Virginia that while the governor is powerful, the speaker is all powerful in Virginia's legislature. It's tough because the speaker, the current speaker, isn't in favor of it. He stopped votes. In fact, when we got enough votes on a subcommittee to get it out of a subcommittee in the House, even legislation that overwhelmingly passed the state Senate, when we got enough votes on the subcommittee, he would move one of the votes off, right? Mid-term, he would move one of those votes off. So they've really been obstructionist on this issue. There's two parts to this. One, I would say, are you afraid of competitive elections, right? Because I think gerrymandering only protects subpar politicians. So I don't know who he's trying to protect, but I guess the worst parts of his caucus. And the other side, I would say, is that, the speaker before, the most recent example of this in Virginia is the smoking ban in restaurants. It wasn't that long ago where you go to a restaurant and you'd end up smelling like smoke, even if you didn't sit in the smoking section. Now we don't have that. Well, the Speaker of the House, Bill Howell, at one point said, over my dead body, is that going to happen? Well, he's still alive, and we don't have smoking in restaurants, right? That's banned, and I think that's important. We have tobacco leaves on the state seal, for goodness sakes. So it's not an insignificant thing that happened. So when people say that they'll never happen, I'm like, crazier things have happened in Virginia and around the states.
Bill, there's a very moving part in the film where you have people coming up to the microphone, one after another, saying, I support, and these are all influential people coming up to the microphone saying, I support redistricting. And then you cut to a scene where the chair says, I didn't understand it completely, but he says something about, oh, we're going to table this and a whole bunch of other things, and it just all goes away.
Right. Yeah, interestingly enough, that was the very first thing we shot for the documentary.
Right.
And it was one of these very, very early morning subcommittee meetings that are public hearings that are frankly, scheduled at that time of day because it's so difficult for people to even get there. But many people turned out. Right. They don't really want to hear from me. But many, many people turned out. And as we reflected in the video, as you say, we show lots of people coming to the microphone and saying, I'm for reform. I'm for reform. I'm for reform. Then the chair asks, is there anybody who would like to speak on the other side? And nobody. We let the silence go. And then just to emphasize what's really happening here, we super the fact that no one spoke in opposition of these reform bills. And yet then we have the chair start talking about how he believes that it's not really going to be independent anyway, and you know, it makes it less transparent, and they vote it down.
Brian, I'd like to move on about volunteers, people who are volunteering for your organization, One Virginia 2021. And what's, by the way, before I forget again, what is the URL? What is your URL on the web?
Oh, it's www.onevirginia2021.org. So that's one in Virginia spelled out the long way, O-N-E-V-I-R-G-I-N-I-A. And then 2021, like the year we are going to redistrict next in Virginia.
Right.
And so we hope to get it right by then.
And we will link to that. We will link to that to your site on the podcast of this program on Seville Podcast later this afternoon. I wanted to talk about your volunteers. I understand one of the big things that you like to do is you call working the polls.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Sure. So we have actually Linda Perriello from out this way came up with the idea of four elections ago. She said, Brian, why don't we get people care about this. Why don't we get them to talk to other people at the polls? That's the height of their civic awareness, right? They're voting. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're going into the ballot booth to realize there's no choice there. A lot of that has to do with gerrymandering. Why don't we talk to people there? So the first year we did this was November of 2015. And if you didn't vote that November, you were in the overwhelming majority of Virginians who joined you in that. And most people don't know these off-year elections. But we had 40 people work the polls. Then on the March 1st presidential primary, we got that number up to 85 people working the polls. And then last November, it was 235 folks working the polls. We were overwhelmed. And what I mean by working the polls is folks will volunteer to take a shift or a whole day at a local precinct, and they will thank voters for coming out to vote. Usually tell them, I'm the only one here who doesn't care how you vote. I just want to talk to you about gerrymandering. So we usually talk to voters after they've voted so that they can have a little bit of, you know, they're not anxious about somebody influencing their vote. And then you say, look, would you like to sign a petition to help us end gerrymandering, have a conversation, engage them? It's a great way to talk to people, and it's talking to people who vote. So we went from 235 volunteers last November, and we were trying to get 500 for the June 13th primaries. We were overwhelmed. We got 650 people to work the polls. I think it was actually 649. Somebody got food poisoning. But 650 folks working the polls on primary day. It looks like we gained another 14,000 new supporters all around Virginia. A lot, of course, here in the Charlottesville region, but in Northern Virginia and in Chesterfield and Henrico, all over the state. It's a huge moment for us. I mean, this group has grown and this movement has grown exponentially.
And do you have enough volunteers now? You need more?
I need more all the time, right? Everybody can can help us. I mean, first of all, you know, we don't have to wait till election day to talk to people about gerrymandering, though our new goal is 1,000 volunteers at the polls this November. And that's a great way. You find out, you end up talking to a bunch of people, handing out a bunch of literature. Usually you get about 20, 24 new supporters per volunteer. So that's just a wonderful opportunity to talk to your neighbors about it and to put a face on this issue, right? This is as Bill described, it's hard to get a visual for this. Well, here you go. So we definitely need more volunteers, but I also need people hashtag in gerrymandering every chance you get.
I have trouble imagining you ever saying, yeah, we've got enough now.
Yeah, no. Overwhelm these folks.
And if someone wants to, one of our listeners wants to get involved with the One Virginia 2021 project, how would they go about doing that?
They can email director@onevirginia2021.org, find us on Facebook. Our Twitter handle, by the way, is a little condensed. We do 1VA2021, and one is the number. So our Twitter handle is a little tighter just because that the long version of our name plus gerrymandering, there's no room left for any characters.
And do you provide any kind of training or indoctrination for your volunteers to get them comfortable with this process?
We indoctrinate everybody. No, we do training. We do local trainings. We do phone trainings. We give them materials. The way we view it as an organization, we have three people on our staff full time. So the way we view it is our volunteers are our customers, and we try to make sure the customer experience is awesome, because if it is, they'll feel empowered to have conversations with their neighbors. And that's critical for this.
Less than a minute to go. What's coming up? What events are coming up for Winds Virginia 2021 that you want to get people out to?
So I want people to create their own events. We need to show this jerry-rigged film that Bill and WCVE produced because it's so darn good and it explains this perfectly and have that conversation. We need to have these conversations in our neighborhoods, whether it's a big amphitheater, whether it's just a home viewing of the movie with a couple of your friends. We need to do that. Election Day is coming up in November. We need volunteers for that. And we need people just to talk about this issue. Help us amplify the voice and really fight for this to be the right issue that we should be fighting for.
Okay, that URL again?
OneVirginia2021.org.
Guys, thank you both so much for coming in and being part of our program. And thank you so much for doing this, for putting the energy and the time. I can't imagine how much time you both are spending on this. It's really heartening to see some good going on in the political system. And you guys are to be commended for your work, and I hope you come back and see us again real soon.
It's been great, Dan. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you for everybody listening.
You can listen to this and every episode of The Wake Up Call at SeavillePodcast.com. Join us next Sunday at 11 a.m. when Kara McClurkin will be here to talk about spinal muscular atrophy. And join me 2 weeks from today when I'll talk with Joanna Lott and Nathan Moore about the role of everyday people in the resistance. Coming up at noon on 94.7 WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. We leave you today with some final thoughts on gerrymandering from the One Virginia 2021 film Jerry-Rigged, Turning Democracy on Its Head. For the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
But I do think it's very difficult for us to try to draw these lines. There isn't any doubt that they're unsatisfactorily drawn, not only for the Congress, which is not the worst offender, but for state legislatures, where we have very... and have had for many years notorious examples of gerrymandering, but which is a responsibility for the states, not the federal government.
Even the body that the framers of our Constitution intended to be the most vulnerable to shifts in public attitudes, the House of Representatives, has, with a combination of gerrymandering, changes in campaign finance rules, and the powers of incumbency, become a virtually permanent chamber, no longer truly responsive to the people.
No single factor is more basic to restoring competitive elections than ensuring fair redistricting. I propose a new criteria for redistricting without favor to party. To respect established community boundaries, we must draw district lines that respect the needs of the people, not tailor them to the political needs of either party.
If we want a better politics, it's not enough just to change a congressman or change a senator or even change a president. We have to change the system to reflect our better selves. I think we've got to end the practice of drawing our congressional districts so that politicians can pick their voters and not the other way around.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.